I'm Maureen, grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater from Dallas, Texas. And the title of this talk is covering the tools of, I have to speak in this one too, don't I? Okay, is eat, meet, and greet. And, of course, that covers the tools of plan of eating, meetings, and service. I just want to start off in saying that my level of healing couldn't be reached until my paralyzing dependencies were broken, and broken in depth. They were broken, and then they had to be broken again at a deeper level. My true self was repressed by my addiction, and the acceptance of my basic goodness was a quantum leap in my spiritual journey. So I've been inspired by hearing various people talk on this topic, and a spiritual leader who mentioned these things. He's not programmed, but he works a lot with 12-step people. So I have copies of my pictures that are going around, and my journey began in OA in June of 1983. I heard first about OA when I was watching television and saw a late-night TV, a woman opening up a refrigerator and crying, and it blowed me over. And then there's a picture in there that I mentioned with little notes that when I saw that picture of myself, I really saw myself. I never saw myself down. I saw my face on the head up. And it really, I remembered that bad. And so I went and asked a girlfriend to go with me, and she never went back, and I stayed. So I had been on a whole business of course, as most of us, with diets and pills and hypnotism and all sorts of stuff, and it just got progressively worse. Some of the pictures you see, I looked like I was normal. And one of them, when I found a picture later on. I have a baby picture there, looks perfectly normal, and then I have one when I was 10. And you can tell that I have a coat on that was flail coat that was common. And then my sister, who's only 15 months younger than me, who is much shorter than me, we look different, and she had a fitted coat on. And my mother at that time mentioned, I was 10, that she was proof that I fed the family. Of course, like she comes from a depression, you know, raised her in the depression, so she had that mindset. And but that stuck with me. You know, my whole life I went through a little forgiveness with that remark. So it was proof she fed the family. So I progressively gained weight. And I remember this one picture there. I was 170 pounds when I married, 20 over what my absolute limit was going to be of 150. Absolute limit, and then it was 170. So then after that, I was in the Air Force at that time. I was injured in Vietnam, and I was, you know, constantly had to go to weight things. You know, you went to weight things and did that. And I married my husband, and he got out of the service, and then I transferred into the reserve unit in the same area. I was in San Antonio, Texas at that time. And then when I went to the reserve unit, they were constantly on my weight, constantly. Every month when I went for reserve duty, I would get a talk about my weight. And I was nothing compared to what I got to. I mean, it was nothing. So I got out of the major, really mustered out because of my weight. I really was going to stay in for my 20 in the reserves. So in 83, when I joined OA, I knew how to diet. So when I heard the word compulsive overeater, it was joys. Oh, my God, that's what I am to the core of my being. That's what I am. And so I proceeded to diet. And I got a sponsor because they said, get a sponsor. And I had a sponsor. And she said, you got to work the steps. No, I'm good. I am good. I know what I am. So the knowledge. So I lost 100 pounds that year. And then my sponsor said, you got to work. So I fired her because I was tired of hearing about it. And then, of course, I lost my abstinence. And I gained my weight back. And I got somebody who had relapse experience and started to work the steps, reluctantly, but worked the steps. And had a really release when I gave away my fifth step. It was a really deep release that I did have. And so I went along for a while, and I maintained maybe 100-pound weight loss for 5 years, and I lost it again. And somebody, Mike Kay is here. Mike came to Dallas, and he was a substitute speaker. And I heard him say that sometimes the emotional aspects of this program gets to us after 5 years, and we lose it. And that's exactly, I said, well, that's what happened to me. So I floundered around for several years in and out of OA, and finally in January 2000, I was gifted with abstinence. I don't know, the computer bugs, everybody was going to fall down the earth because of the computer turning over. And I said, I was ready on January 1st, as we all started diets at that time. That's my abstinence date. So I was on a food plan, lost 50 pounds the first year. I said, well, I'm older, that's why I'm not losing this 100. And then the next year I lost about 10. And then I said, you know, I got to change. I got to do something different. So I went to Seattle, that's where my daughter is from, and when I went to Seattle, I walked to her. She had wonderful OA meetings right by her house. I used to go with them all the time. I went, walked into one, and it was a gray sheet meeting, and I didn't know that. Gray sheet was the first diet plan in the OA. So I said, oh, my God. I felt it was God-driven, and I said, I need it. I was told forever, get off the white stuff, get off the flour, the starches. You know, I was playing games with them for 20 years, 20 years. And so I said, I need I want the gray sheet. No, you can't get it without a sponsor. Okay, anybody willing to be my email sponsor? So somebody was, and so I started on the gray sheet in June of 2002. So in our literature, we did away with all those sheets, and then we brought back the dignity of choice, which hopefully all of you have seen. So I am on, if you equate it, it's the last plan, the low carbohydrate plan. That's basically the gray sheet, and that's what I follow. And so when I went on it, I mean, the rest of the weight just fell off. I wasn't hungry at all. Lots of food. It was good. So I had been on that now for 18 years or so, 19 years, and I've been maintaining my weight that long, longest ever in my life. So for me, I found, quote, for me, the magic bullet was that plan of eating, but it would not work if I didn't work the steps and didn't go to meetings. I go to 3 OA meetings a week, 1 other 12-step program I've decided that I am a member of, and then I go to a Step 11 meeting almost. It's contemplative prayer on meditation. So I have those rounded that really have helped me, and I have to say that doing the 11th step for the past 7 years consistently every morning, meditating for about 40 minutes has really helped with my recovery in the spiritual realm. So having a food plan is essential in this program. Having a food plan that will get you to your desired weight is essential. Having to change and accept that. When I came back in January, I hated the big book. I didn't like the big book. It was just all these old men. And I just, in my first big book, I had all this changes. Sara Lee instead of John Barleycorn and all these crazy changes. So I loved, when I came back, loved the big book. I could relate to the Skid Row bum. That's what I was, a Skid Row bum when it came to food. And I had to accept and surrender at a deeper level. I just had to look at myself realistically. So getting down to what my allergic foods were, what set me off on a binge, there are ingredients in certain things that you have to look at. I have to look at sugar. I have to look at that it's the fifth ingredient in food and not have that. There are certain fats. I have to find out. Even in this program, I weigh and measure, but sometimes I can't maintain within the 10 pounds because I'm eating too much fats. I'm having foods that have too much fats in it. The meats that I have fatty, I have maybe having too much bacon, maybe having too much cheese. So I have to look at it realistically and talk to my sponsor. But still within my food plan, still within my weight and measure, but the foods I'm eating within it are not been healthy for me. So I lost 10 pounds that I wanted to lose by getting less on the fats. But it took me a year. And I'm saying, oh my God, that may be what normal people do. That's not normal for me. And seemed to worry in my life, 10 pounds. Oh my God, that's nothing compared when you have over 100 to lose. So, food plan is essential. And if you are in the, how many here are here less than a year in the program? Okay. So if you're here over a year, depending on what your, is that time to switch from food plans?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So we will move on, but food plans, as I said, are essential, but meetings also, and this is where I've learned a lot about compulsive food behaviors. We changed the definition of OA not only to be abstinent, but to refrain from compulsive food behaviors. I learned that in meetings, by people sharing and going around in meetings and helping with that. There are kernels that happen in meetings all the time. Even people who I have a personality thing about them, I've learned now to have compassion. When I have my resentment or a judgment about a person, I would sort of tune them out. And now I am getting better at, no matter what comes out of a person's mouth, is for my benefit. It's for my benefit. People that I meet on a daily basis or at meetings are there for my benefit, and I can learn from them. And I didn't realize for a while. But if I go to the same meetings all the time, which I do, I go to 3 meetings a week, and then sometimes the same people are there. Sometimes you don't, and you can see the recovery, and that's great in the meetings, you can see that. But I find sometimes I need to get out of myself and go to other meetings, and that's where and I'm moving into a little bit of service, but getting to intergroup and seeing other faces that are there, getting outside and going to conventions or workshops that are held within the intergroup really helps expand the meetings and the people that I can listen to. So meetings are essential, because I felt like in the very beginning, I know what a food, I know how to diet, I know how to do it, I can do it myself. And this is not a self program. It is a we program. And we say Roseanne's Prayer, the same thing. This is a we deal. And she has that mentioned throughout the book, Beyond Our Wildest Dreams. So that's very important. Once I became aware that I needed to be a compulsive overeater on a deeper level and get that in my gut, I had to be willing to change and accept that I couldn't continue doing some of the things that I was doing. But that compulsive food behaviors, I learned in meetings. This woman was sharing, she was single. I eat in front of the television. I eat, I read a book. I do things, when I'm eating. And then that gets a compulsive food behavior. You're not identifying the foods you're eating. And I said, well, I don't do that. I was just saying, oh, I don't do that. What did I do? I looked at food ads. Food ads, Wednesdays, food ads. And I would look at them all week long. What store am I going to go here? What store? I was compulsive about that. So I wasn't reading a book. I don't do it in front of television. I learned from meetings by people sharing what they have added as far as the eating behaviors are concerned. So meetings have been great for that. Activities that people do on a daily basis, their daily plans that they talk about, the action plans. Somebody shares, this is one that's my favorite tool. Do you have Colorado, you talk about the tools during the meetings. So we have a place where people share what tool worked for them this week. And so some people share on the same tool, and I'm going, oh, my God, here she goes again about writing, or here he goes again about, about this. But it really does help me say that this is really where I need to be. This is a tool I don't use as much. And the benefits, when they talk about the benefits and how they got to a deep level with the sorrow that they're going through, that they really could identify more because they were writing about it. I need to hear that stuff, even though I say, that's not my favorite tool. But we all have our favorites, but it's important to try to use all of them as much as you can. meetings that are focused on specific things. I was sharing with somebody earlier. I go to a meeting that we do the Voices of Recovery, and that is, and the person who's leading it gets the, decides on the topic. Also the meeting of Abstinent Book, and that was a meeting that I started because in Dallas we didn't use that literature in meetings, so I used the Abstinent Book, and now we've gone to, you know, we've gone to the second edition. And then the third meeting I go to, we do the Steps and Traditions. And just this last week, we started using the new one because they've come out with a new edition for that and a new workbook for that. So meetings are a wonderful way to get through the literature. We always have group copies for people to use, but this is a way to expand the amount of literature that is being used because of the meetings that we're going to. The newcomer, I think in the newcomer in the meetings that we go to, it's, I think it's very important that we address them. The meetings I go to are 12:10, and people can bring their lunch at those meetings. And a lot of working people, retired people, yes, but a lot of working people come to those meetings. So it's hard sometimes to catch them because they have to get back to work, you know, when they come. But if you can, you know, really get a telephone number and call a newcomer that they were so excited to see them, because our lifeblood is the newcomers coming in. And some places we used to have we don't have it anymore, and I really enjoyed it. One group would do a newcomers meeting, of course, in January, which is always a good thing to do. We need to have that more often. I'm going on to service a little bit now, because it goes into meetings and service. Everything that you do in OA, Bill W. said, you know, the most important thing we do is carry the message to the next alcoholic, the next compulsive overeater. So newcomers are important. But we also need to think about how we are doing service within the meeting, and showing up for meetings is fine. We can do that, but also doing the little things. You can get a newcomer, especially if you get a new sponsee, to help with the tables, to help with putting away the literature, to help putting out the literature, to man a meeting. That is a great way for them to do service, because we have it all written down. All they have to do is read it, and so we'll help you with that. And I think you weren't there, but Vicky, somebody was talking about that at our assembly meeting, about the third meeting she was in, she was leading it, you know, and so that's how she got involved. The more you get them involved with the meeting, the more service they're doing, but you're strengthening their recovery. It all the tools sort of work together and flow together to help our recovery and to stop the isolation that we have. I shared a lot in my life, but it was all surface. It was nothing from the core. And I have found that in OA, the way I am on the outside is much more open with people out there at meetings. And sometimes people say, wait, because I go to a lot of spiritual things, the Bible says, and I share from deep things where people are not used to that kind of stuff. But I have found that when I do service and share in that part, it enhances their ability to speak on subjects that are meaningful. So this is where service in OA can help you so much in the outside world, because we cannot be divorced and just be in our own little cliques. And that's another thing that I feel is important, because some people use OA as a social clique. I go there and I have found people who accept me and love me as I am, and I'm sitting there and I'm at a meeting, and I'm sitting at meetings, but I sit there and I do nothing but go to a meeting. Yes, it's service showing up, but there's no other service involved in that. There's no commitment maybe to do the seventh tradition. There's nothing to do about helping be the intergroup rep, to help buy the literature for the meeting, to be a contact person. So the more service that a person can do within the individual meeting, the more healthy a meeting is. People who have service positions and stay at that because they're good at it, but they're there all the time, is unhealthy for us to have. And I'm going to point the finger at that because we have one meeting. He's a treasurer. He's been a treasurer forever. When I was a treasurer, for much longer than it was necessary. So, and trying to get people to be the intergroup rep. I got 3 meetings. We don't have an intergroup rep to come. And I say that at every meeting. I said, we even have a phone meeting. You don't have to leave your house. You can call the phone number for the intergroup meeting and you can sit at home and listen to the meeting. How easy is that? You know, and it's just hard where people are not used to doing service out there. It really is. So, let's see. I know we got started. Okay. So, am I open for questions now?
Yes, ma'am. Well, you can continue to talk for 5 more minutes and then open up to questions or questions, whatever you prefer.
Well, we have more people coming in. The pictures are going around, right?
Yes.
With their okay. So, do you handle questions where people address questions to me? Yes. Okay, I am open for anybody have questions about me, eat, and greet. Any specific questions that you might have?
Just stand next to me because I have something to read. Okay. I'm sharing the mic. All right?
Okay.
Does that sound good? All right. Time shares from the floor of the audience are 3 minutes each. We ask that you stick to the topic of this workshop, and please forgive me for not announcing it at the beginning. The topic of the workshop today is, thank you, eat, meet, and greet. So you'll have 3 minutes to share. Yes, please. Those who are two hatters are asked to share only your recovery in OA.
How do I handle resentments for service when you do it, if you seem like you're the person who's doing it all the time? Okay, so I chaired our Dallas convention 2 years in a row, and I got a service sponsor when I did the first one, and I asked him to be my service sponsor for the second time. And I could not have done it without his support when I was getting frustrated about something and couldn't find somebody to do the position. And I was doing the positions, and he told me, that is your main job as a convention chair, is to get people to full it. You're not to do it. And so I prayed. People just came and stepped up. So it's sometimes having a support person to help you with a service position. Now, I know this is different when you're, if you're a treasurer at the group, the thing is ultimatums. I finally said, I've done this for 5 years, and I'm stepping down, and this is the last date that I'm going to do it, and somebody needs to take over the finances. And somebody stepped up. So That's the way it is if I've done a service position and it's rotating. Because I know we rotate in a group a lot. But I just found out a wonderful thing at our meeting here. A nominating committee. You can get a nominating committee at your intergroup. And that intergroup meeting does not need nobody needs an absent requirement. Nobody needs any qualifications. There's a small group to get together, and they will go to their different meetings, and they will ask somebody, because I swear, if you ask somebody to step up for service, they're much more likely to do it instead of just putting out this blanket call, I need somebody to do it. And so this was like a shot in the arm for me. I'm saying, I say this in a group, I need to go up to somebody. You really need to consider doing that service. And just pointed out. So I'm hoping to talk to the intergroup when I get back and say we need a nominating committee to fill these positions, and a person needs to be face to face to do it. Because I didn't share my story for 2 or 3 years. I've a long time, and somebody came up and said, "Would you share your story?" And that gave me the courage to share my story to my children. Mm-hmm. And to share so much more, because I just wouldn't tell people the stuff that has happened to me in my growing up years. So anyway, thank you for the question.
Anyone else like to share? Does anyone have a question for Maureen?
I'm Jane V, a recovering compulsive overeater from Albuquerque. Could you say some more about, it's not really the topic of the workshop, and I understand if you don't want to, but about your practice with the 11th step. I've heard of that, and I'm very intrigued by what you're doing.
Okay, so I went to a workshop by a spiritual leader who was talking for 12 steps, how to incorporate this process of contemplative prayer in meditation into the 11th step. And he says, I think people need to get into the 11th step a lot sooner. Mm-hmm. I know we work the steps in sequence, but you got to get to that sooner. So maybe after to talk. I think a sponsor needs to decide, but I think getting into this. We are a spiritual-based program. We've got to get to the spiritual and this acceptance that we're not God and that we are not a higher power. And we need to spend time with this higher power, whatever we define it as, in order to feel that that higher power is working in our life. So I was not a person to meditate. I feel I've gone... I just, it was not my deal. So somebody at a church conducted a workshop, so I went to a workshop on using contemplative prayer, using that meditation. So it's 20 in the minutes in the morning, 20 at night. I could never get to the night stuff, and I went to a workshop. I'm busy during the day, and I forget during the day, so I can't get in that 40 minutes. She says, well, do it in the morning. Okay. So I said, okay. So I've been now doing this consistently for several years now, three, four at least, in the morning, depending on, I have to plan it when my day is, and when do I'm going to go exercise, what meeting I go to, what's going on with my day, and then I have to set the alarm. And the alarm has got to be set that I've got 40 minutes to sit my butt down and to, I call it RPM, rise, pee, and meditate. So I used to do that a little, you know, just automatically do that in bed. But, yeah, if I could pee. So anyway. So. I would do that, but then sometimes I would sleep because I was tired. So I said, I need to get up and get to a chair, and then I need to drink a bottle of water because my water consumption was low. So I do a few things now before I sit in the chair and meditate. And I find that I did not know what was happening to me until other people mentioned it. You see, a lot calmer. It's like a let and let live attitude. It's why, you know, don't get hot and bothered. How important is it? There's a lot more calm in my life when I meditate because I'm sitting still for so long, and it has happened where my clock didn't work, and I was there for an hour, but my butt was hurting, so I realized that maybe something was wrong with the phone. So it's a process, and it cannot happen. So I have to have some sponsees sometimes do 33 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever. I would love to see OA meetings that have some longer meditation in them in the beginning. We say the Serenity Prayer, but maybe a longer time in just sitting and being quiet. I go to another 12-step program. We have about at least 3 minutes of quiet before. So I just think developing a relationship with a higher power takes time. And you've got to decide for yourself what that time's going to be. And it's great if I'm home at 3 in the afternoon and I have my cup of coffee and I'm alert, I'll do it. I'll do a little bit extra, 10 minutes or something. But I'm finding I will stop a lot of things. I sometimes will not go to mass or not go to exercise if I can't fit in that 40 minutes. That's my priority. I sometimes will change things because that's priority. And I love for today that book, Repetition is the Only Form of Permanence That Nature Can Achieve. That's in For Today. I forget what page it's on, but how you've got to repeat what works for you every single day, one day at a time. And that it's a miracle it happens. I mean, it is. And somebody says to me, oh, you're so consistent with your recovery, or because I weigh and measure my food, and it's like the most spiritual thing I could do is to fix my food. And somebody said that at a meeting. And that was a service to me to hear that, because when I was working and get home and the kids and da-da-da-da-da, and I had to fix my lunch and I had to fix my supper because I was going someplace afterwards, the most spiritual thing you could do is to fix your food. And that's my amends to myself, is to doing that. So it's all the eating plan, the spiritual, our emotions, it's all geared up. But it's higher power who is in charge. And we are just sort of messengers and say things to each other that clicks. Sometimes it just clicks. And you know that this is something you need to do. Thanks.
Thanks, Maureen.
Okay. Hi, I'm Penny. I'm a compulsive overeater. My husband was in program as well, so there were times when we would talk about doing various things in various ways. I did them this way, he did them that way, and we were both right, because for us it worked. But one of the days we were talking about it, and he said, you know, Penny, he said, I just can't meditate by sitting in a chair and just thinking. He said, I fall asleep, and he had sleep apnea, so that was part of the problem. But he said, you know what I love to do, though, is I love to go to meetings. And when I listen to what people share, he said, that's my meditation. He said, that's God talking to me with skin on. And then I started reading our literature, and it talks about prayer, talking to God, meditating, listening to God. And I thought, well, that's quite valid. And I thought, from then on, when I go to a meeting, I think to myself, you know, I'm kind of meditating by listening, hopefully without judgment, to what other people say. And so, that also brings my husband with me today, not because I miss him as usual, but the idea of listening to other people and hearing God's voice in it is what I'm moved by.
Hi, I'm Craig. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Tulsa.
Hi, Craig. Hi, Craig.
Thank you for your lead and your share. I want to talk a little bit, kind of pile on that 11th step thing. What I found works for me, I'm not one that can sit and meditate till I levitate. You know, I'm just not. I've never been framed that way, you know. But what I can do, online, there's a whole lot of guided meditations. There's a lot of AA 11th step guide. If you Google AA 11th step guided meditations, and I can put one of those on and close my eyes, turn my cell phone off, and listen to that, and that gets me there, you know. And it'll get me in a state where then, when that's over, I can continue to listen for God. But God speaks to me through those guided meditations quite often. There's the other part of that 11th step, of course, is prayer and meditation. And I use my alarms, and my cell phone goes off every 2 hours. I have a prayer that I say for my feet hit the floor in the morning, which is basically, God, guide my thoughts and actions today. You know, help show me how I can be of service to you and others. Divorce me of selfishness and self-centeredness. And then every 2 hours that alarm goes off, and it reminds me to stop for a minute and see if I need a course correction. You know, I'm not a pilot, but I took flying lessons for a while, and the guy that was teaching me always said, gentle corrections. He said, what'll crash you more than anything is jerking the yoke too fast. He said, if you keep yourself where you're doing gentle corrections. So for me, that's every 2 hours, it's a gentle correction. Okay, I've gotten off into self-pity, or I've gotten off into trying to control a situation I shouldn't control. So I turn it over, and then I keep going. And that's, for me, that's part of working the 11th step, as well as the daily inventory. I do my inventory when I get home in the evening, because that's when I have something to inventory. I know the big book suggests in the morning, but I do the inventory at that time. But those things all work in concert, and for me, that is the essence of the spiritual way of life. So anyway, thank you.
All right. We're ready to close. If everybody will circle up and gather hands, we'll close with the serenity prayer, please.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. It works when you work it, and you're worth it.